And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and look what the cat dragged in.
Hey, how are you, folks? Scotty Hertz here. I'm just off from breaking the world coughing record, but I survived, and you can too. I think this town in itself has probably broken that record several times over, so stay well, wash your hands.
Good advice.
Pray to the god of your choice, and you might be okay.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel or subscribe through iTunes. Today we will talk about the politics of sanctuary cities, whether or not Guelph should be one of them, and what we should all think about the rather serious undercurrent of racism that seems to have boiled to the surface in the royal city. And then we will celebrate 65 years of Queen Elizabeth II's reign and what her enduring legacy might be as she transitions from Britain's sovereign to that nice old lady to pop culture icon thanks to the Netflix series The Crown. And then finally, we will go back to Washington, where days feel like weeks, and we'll see what shenanigans Donald Trump and the gang got up to in this week's installment of the Wild Wild White House. But first, the now 14-person conservative leadership race headed to Halifax last weekend for another debate, which featured the long-awaited national stage debut of one Kevin O'Leary, who graciously decided to debate in person because Lord knows he doesn't think he has to do anything else in person in terms of this job, but there you go. Let's get controversial here right off the top.
Ooh.
I think it's time to call this herd, Scotty. There's 14 of them. I think, you know, the debate or what they're calling the leadership event is in 4 months. I think we need to start seriously consolidating forces here.
For sure. I think if there's any point that O'Leary makes that's a good one, he's like 14 people in the contest. You're reduced to sound bites, regardless of which language it's in.
Yeah.
I know at the French debate that people were pretty, some of them were just reading prepared statements. So to call that herd would make a lot of sense because, there's obviously only one winner and there's maybe a half dozen true contenders to the throne. So some of them should probably see the writing on the wall and step aside. I don't think they're going to. I think they're all committed to be in this and for the long haul. Or it's the shorter haul now. What is it? 4 months, whatever's left. Not even. But that's the thing. I think it's one of those things where if they run for this and they're still part of the party, maybe not as much the Chris Alexanders of the operation, but the ones that are MPs are maybe hoping that in some sort of future dream government, they'll get some kind of seed and maybe that's why they're sticking it out. But I can't see it somehow. There's a few people need to see the writing on the wall and call it a day.
Oh, yeah. I made a list.
I wasn't going to go that far, but I have a list too, but I wasn't going to make it public.
No, Alexander. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
This is someone who Killing at one time probably could have been a leader, but I mean, he's, excuse me.
Uh-oh, the cough. Uh-oh.
No, so, I'm just.
Didn't get it from me.
Dry throat. Yeah. Alexander, he's.
Wasting time.
Yeah, he's one time he could have been, but he's like tainted too much. And he's not like Kelly Leach, who's kind of leaned way in to the hard right stuff. He's got like no support at all. Maxime Bernier, I mean, he has some surprising amount of support. And
I think in the support, he's number one in terms of just cash, isn't he? I mean, maybe not dedicated supporters, although you need supporters to get the cash. But as far as I understand it, he's top of the list of fundraising. So and that usually bodes well for that person.
I think he's only like the only real Quebecer in the race, too.
Well, there's Blaney, too, right?
Well, I'll get to Blaney.
Okay,
yeah,
we'll
Blaney
get to Blaney.
Blaney should go, too. Blaney has...
He's on the goal list. He's Quebecer, but he must go, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you're going to have a... If you only have one Quebecer, you're going to go with someone who has endorsements and money and support and seems, you know... Seems to have, you know, momentum. Blaney has no momentum.
True.
And then you have Michael Chong, who is kind of, I think, the dark horse of the race. He's the one sort of, you know, going out there and really testing, you know, the limits of conservative ideals and what it means to be a Canadian conservative and member of the Conservative Party. He also has the the Maverick card, I guess, because of, you know, he once resigned his his cabinet seat.
And I think he has some of those people that are like the idea of parliamentary reform behind him.
Yeah,
he loses
absolutely.
Points, I think, for carbon tax with the Conservatives, but local fella, though, you know, we like him. So.
Friend of the show.
And friend of the show.
Kelly Leach. I mean, obviously.
No friend of the show.
No friend of the show.
Well, she might be. Kelly, if you're out there. You're just up Highway 6 there.
Well, that's true. She's obviously made a lot of noise by not, you know, embracing what am I thinking of? Because, you know, when she went on Power on Politics after the election and you know, cried because, you know, for the barbaric cultural practice line and all that stuff, she's kind of gone the other way on that now, and it seems to have worked in her favor, like embracing wholeheartedly Trumpism.
Yeah, it was, I shouldn't have done that, and then, but I'm going to do it.
Actually, there is another Quebecer. His name's Pierre Lemieux, but he should go out because I totally forgot he was in this.
Pierre who? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he's not even on my list.
Obrey?
The secret candidate.
Yeah, I mean, there's Obrey, too. I mean, Obrey doesn't have a lot of support either, but he kind of like his...
I think people like him, though.
He kind of has a maverick quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean...
Only gets you so far,
he could
though.
Stay or he could go. no offense to Mr. Obrey. O'Leary... who, oddly enough, 14 man in a 14 person race, and the first one to complain about the size of the race. He's got name recognition. I mean, I looked at the poll numbers, and he tops the polls amongst conservative supporters, conservative members, and then just like Canadians in general.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's because of pure name recognition. It's like, well, I know of Kevin O'Leary. Maybe I don't know Maxime Bernier or Steve Blaney or Michael Chong, but, you know.
Or Lemieux.
You don't
Pierre
have
Lemieux.
To. So, I mean, I don't. I would like to see him go because I don't think his, you know, he's really serious about it. But then there's Aaron O'Toole, who has a lot of support and I think is probably one of those people who might make.
Squeak up the medal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's kind of harmless. He was not harmless. He just has that good-natured kind of, you know, I'm not one of those harsh conservatives, but
right.
I'm still fiscal responsibility. Hitting all the right notes, let's say, with the base, the wider base that isn't, say, the Christian. That's where Lemieux is part of the
yes.
Christian contingent, isn't he?
But, yeah.
But Trost, I think, takes that one in
well,
terms
we'll
of
get
backing
to Trost.
From
yeah.
campaign life.
But, I mean, O'Toole gets a lot of brownie points because he had to, like, pick up the shattered remains of Veterans Affairs after...
with a little thing of glue, he sort of knocked
yeah.
it together.
I can't even remember. Julian Fentino, that's right.
Ah, yes.
Can't believe I forgot that name.
Easy
Rick
done.
Peterson, who is like a hedge fund guy,
oh,
so you
yeah.
automatically hate him. But he's from... well, you know, whenever you see something on TV...
You see Adam's true color shine through.
and, you know, there's somebody doing bad stuff, and there's a hedge fund guy. You
isn't O'Leary pretty much a hedge fund guy? Like,
well,
maybe
he's,
not hedge
like
fund,
a, so. He's like an investor kind of...
If you give me $10,000, I'll help you make $11,000.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, sort of. Hedge your bets. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he was involved in the BC Conservative Party, so how great can he be? When was the last
Eight
time you heard about the
like
BC Conservative Party?
Yeah. Aren't they called the Liberals? Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes, we need that sound effect.
then
just for laughs, right?
There's
now.
Lisa Raitt, who I think...
You think she should split?
No, no, I think she should stay.
Oh, she's
no,
on your stay list.
She's on,
okay.
She's on the stay list. Absolutely,
right.
She's on the stay list. Andrew Saxton. I wrote something down about Andrew Saxton, but I can't find it, which may...
Andrew, if you're out there, give us a call and tell us your pulses. We don't know.
He's one of these, again, he's one of these guys who can, you know, stay or go, I think.
I can't even visualize this
yeah,
person.
Yeah, there was
and
some
I did
reason,
the homework. I did the readings.
No, I did
I'm
the homework,
like,
too.
Yes. We always do our homework, folks, but I'm telling you, every once in a while, it's like...
I can't fit everything in my little notes here. Anyway, and then there's Andrew Scheer, who does have, like, an element of the right wing in him. I mean, he's from Saskatchewan, so...
I have Andrew Saxton, lower taxes. So there you go. That's all I have. Lower taxes.
They don't want to lower
I don't like taxes.
Anyway.
I'm a taxpayer.
Nobody likes taxes. We're all conservative
in
that
taxpayer.
Regard.
Oh, no, but Michael Chong, carbon tax.
Anyway.
Tell you what.
And then finally, Brad Trost, who, you know, he's the Monty McNaughton here. He just, all he has is the social
beans
conservative.
On Trost. There you go.
And it's like, he's like, I'm 100% conservative.
Yes, that's his slogan, isn't it?
100%. And then he's the only MP who voted against Gender Equality Week. He didn't vote against gender equality. He voted against Gender Equality Week.
Yes, because he had that little puppet fingers with the marriage is the union between a man and a woman, and that's about it because Brad Trost says so. So he's the one that Michelle Rempel was pulling faces at one of the. It's fantastic. If you can find a bit, put in Trost and Rempel and watch the sparks fly. It was pretty hilarious. She pulled like the best face of like fellow party member I've ever seen. So I saw a bit of a donor list today because I'm always interested in who's given the cash for these people. And it seems the Dragons have chimed in. As we know, Arlene Dickinson came out kind of against O'Leary, saying, no, I don't think he'd be a good choice. However, Brett Wilson, fellow Dragon,
Wilson.
Has an outright, and there's a Brett Wilson on the list of donors for O'Leary. He didn't actually come out and say that he was, but he said, I'm supporting two of the potential leaders. And it would seem the other one is Chong. So talk about maybe you're giving O'Leary some cash because he's a buddy, and Chong because you might actually believe in what he's doing. Who were some of the other ones? Was Mark Emery, the Prince of Pot, gave some cash to Bernier. I guess he likes sort of the libertarian approach of Maxime Bernier, figures he'll legalize it, calls him Mad Max.
That is a dope nickname.
Yeah, so Mad Max might be pro Hooch, I don't know. And interestingly, another donor to Chong was Martha Hall Finley of the Liberals, ex of the Liberals.
Interesting.
Seems to have thrown a little bit of weight behind Chong. Maybe that's along the reform lines.
Caroline Mulrooney Lapham donated to Lisa Raitt. I discovered that. The maximum amount. Straight up maximum amount.
So that's sort of picking a horse. And I thought Caroline Mulrooney, what's her last? Is it Lapham?
Yeah.
Wasn't she touted as a contender at one point as well? Like, could you see that? Carolyn Mulroney versus Trudeau? That would
I think
be
that was
hilarious.
Like an editorial somebody floated
was it? Oh,
that.
So it wasn't. There's probably no. I mean.
I think it was like one of those Toronto Sun editorials.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she should do it. It'd be Trudeau's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Everybody.
Other than Sue-Ann Levy.
Everybody's Trudeau's worst nightmare these days.
Yeah, it's true enough.
Including us. Rawr. No.
Well, a lot of people in Guelph would like to think they're Trudeau's worst nightmare on issues of electoral reform.
Yes. And, well, one would hope that that's a whole nother story, though, isn't it, I guess? So.
Yep.
Are any of the Conservatives talking electoral reform? I don't think they
are. No,
they
never came up in the debate.
Didn't come
up once,
did it?
And somebody noted that in one of the articles I read. I was like, well, if considering it was a week where the Prime Minister broke a rather central campaign promise, it didn't come up. But, I mean, there's no appetite in the Conservative Party to do electoral reform either.
No, because they benefit from the system as the Liberals have since, I don't know, 1867? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. I do wonder
where it's going to go from here.
I do wonder. I mean, the O'Leary thing is what's vexing me. It's like he says things like, oh, I don't think I have to run for a seat in the House of Commons. Or he says, like, oh, I don't think I have to live in Canada to be prime minister.
You don't think?
I don't think I have to, like, give. I mean, maybe he's just, you know, following Trump's lead and, like, you know, I don't have to give up my businesses or anything like that. But I think. And this is where the electoral reform equation comes into it, because if you look at the polling,
yep,
he's the top of all polls.
Is he? Yeah.
In terms of, you know, as I said before, like the party, Canadians of conservative supporters.
Even though he's just visiting. Ha. Huh. Yeah.
I saw a headline in the Post and it's like, conservative leadership candidate Kevin O'Leary visits Vancouver. And I thought, I was like, did nobody like maybe think of the subtext of that headline? Yeah. But I mean, even, you know, he doesn't live in even if he lived in like Toronto or something, he'd still be visiting Halifax. I understand. But the thing about the electoral reform in O'Leary is I think that, you know, Trudeau and the Liberals are looking at what's going on in the Conservative race, and they see O'Leary at the top. They see Kelly Leach generally near the top. I think they see the next election as a slam dunk.
Yeah, and they know they can take him for the most part.
So, I mean, and then when O'Leary comes out and says things like, huh, I don't really think I need to move to Canada or, like, get a seat in the House of Commons to be prime minister. I'll just shout from the visitors gallery what my questions are. I think we sort of see that metric at work.
Yeah, what was his insult to Trudeau? Not imbecile. It was not moron either. It was something along those lines of, like, he's completely incompetent.
Yeah.
Which is not moron or imbecile, by the way, people. I knew it would come out eventually, but.
Well.
So he's going to sit up in the gallery with the press and go, you're incompetent. Like, you're kicked out again. Can't see it happening.
Oh, this is, I found this interesting. Rona Ambrose was revealed. She spent Christmas break on a billionaire's yacht.
Beautiful stuff. Oh, but it was her partner, so it was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then why'd she run
You're tweeting from the boat that, oh, that Trudeau's so out of touch.
That
with
rascally Trudeau hanging out with billionaires. It's like, pass me that mojito.
Pass me that caviar and a premium plus. There you go.
But there was no questions about the vacation and question period this week. Mm. Wonder why.
Shut down.
I mean, she went to the ethics office. Yeah, like a month after she got back. Congratulations. You discovered that people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
If she was a contender for the leadership, it would probably be more hay made out of it. But instead, it's just kind of like,
yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, this is something they were beaten on Trudeau on being out the out
and
of
Ambrose
touch angle.
Must have been tweeting from her vacation about what to do, right? So she's on the yacht, the billionaire yacht, tooting around.
Anyway.
Yeah. Who are the elites in this country? We should do a whole hour on that one.
Ugh.
Who are the brain police?
Can't think of anything less I'd want to spend an hour on.
Okay, how about 15 minutes?
How about spending 15 minutes talking about sanctuary cities?
Yes.
Because James Gordon, friend of the show.
We played all of his songs, though.
As Jerry Bark would say, friend of the...
Taxpayers' money went into those CDs. I know it did.
Friend of that stupid
Sorry, Jerry,
radio
we'd like
show.
You on, too, if you're listening.
That stupid
honestly,
radio show on CFRU.
An honest appeal.
Those leftist radicals.
You can come on and do Adam's impersonation of you for an hour. We'd love it. It would be compelling radio.
It would be compelling radio. No,
open invitation.
So James Gordon's bringing forward a motion to declare Guelph a sanctuary city. It's actually following suit of a move London, Ontario did, which passed 12-0 last week. If passed, Guelph would be the fifth sanctuary city in Canada after Toronto, Hamilton. Hamilton.
Yeah, Hamilton was one of the first two, I think.
Yeah, and Vancouver. Yeah.
Yep.
Although Ottawa, Montreal, Saskatoon, and Regina are also considering becoming sanctuary cities.
Yeah, most of the major centers in the nation.
But if you go to the story on Guelph today, there's two stories on Guelph today, one when James Gordon announced and the other one when the Guelph Today talked to James Gordon about the reaction. It is profoundly, profoundly negative. Gordon says that he has heard a lot of positive from the community through his various communications channels. But, I mean, if you go to how people get this news, I mean, we don't all have access to James Gordon's email or his Facebook page, but, you go to the Guelph Today website and it's just like this torrent of like, not in my city and da da da. And I did write a piece and I'm a bit disappointed it hasn't been more controversial. My Market Squared column today is about this and about
the
reaction. I just can't create controversy for some reason. When I'm trying to create controversy, I can't. When I'm not trying to create controversy, I do.
It really hits.
Yeah. It's
hard.
When it rains, it pours. But yeah, so I mean, it does seem to come from a place of not really understanding what a sanctuary city is.
And that's a very big part of it because I didn't, by the time I got there, comments are closed. I think it was the Magic website I looked at.
Yeah, they closed comments right up.
So this is still open on Guelph Today.
Yeah.
I'll have to have a look. And obviously, anything that was terribly disparaging, they would take down. Or did they, Guelph Today?
I didn't notice anything terribly disparaging.
Okay, it's the usual, sort of somebody ranting in their underwear kind of comments, right?
So, mm-hmm.
And I think this is the issue that people have with sanctuary cities, is that it's going to cost the taxpayers that are sitting in their underwear making comments on web pages that aren't doing it. James Gordon made the important point about, you know, well, why don't you come and be a delegate when this comes up?
Yeah.
Excellent point. Go to City Hall. If it really bothers you that much, I just want to give people an example of something that goes on in the sanctuary city. You are an undocumented person in town, and you have some altercation or incident that involves police. It doesn't necessarily have to be criminal. Say there's a fire in your house and the police come. If the police somehow find out that you're an undocumented person from that, they can't nail you. They can't haul you away. That's the kind of thing. What does that cost? It costs $0. The police just have to kind of not do that kind of thing. That's an example. Or if you were, say, in town and you're trying to get a shelter bed, for example, and they find out that you're undocumented, they can't just cart you away. This is one of the main things.
Yeah.
And that you have access to the services. Because, I mean, people's impression, I think, is that they're going to get all this stuff for free and I'm a taxpayer. And that's just, it's nonsense. It's absolutely incorrect that is what is happening. So before you lose your mind about this online and start doing all these comments, which are, you know, borderline, not just sort of you're against Sanctuary City, which is your opinion or whatever, it turns like within an instant turns to racism, or at least peer racism, or some sort of racist approach to the, you know, you name it. That has to change. And hopefully the information, everything that comes out of this coming up as a proposal will quash that a bit, because it's just...
Yeah, and I think that's some of the things that sort of come out in the debate. And, you know, people... And I mentioned this in the column I wrote for Guelph Today, that, you know, people who are against the idea of sanctuary cities aren't necessarily racist. I don't necessarily agree with the point, but there is a point to be made that, you know, you're codifying... people who are here illegally, who didn't go through the front door, so to speak. But these people are here anyway. You know, we have people who are brought here who come in with student visas, who just, you know, kind of fall off the grid and stick around after they get their degree. You have people who are temporary foreign workers.
That's a big one.
Migrant workers, too. A lot of people, like, we're surrounded by farms here. And, you know, and I hate to tell people this, but, you know, the people, chances are the person who's picking your fruits and vegetables, some of what you get at the farmer's market, probably weren't done by Canadian-born hands.
No, haven't been for years.
Yeah.
It's not true about all of them, but the major, you know, the larger industrial operations, let's say. Because, you know, I mean, I've worked on farms too, and believe me, not easy work, but, I, you know, in terms of being undocumented, I mean, it's just there. That is just how that system works, and there are people that fall off the grid or that for whatever reasons can't go home. Mm-hmm. I mean, you name it, the gamut of reasons are out there. There's a revolution in your homeland, you can't go anywhere. And we need to be mindful of that too, because there is much a part of this country, undocumented or not, you know, or, you know, without documents. In my view, we absolutely have to look after them. The problem is when it turns to racism. And just to briefly comment on what's going on in Quebec right now, just however many days after the shooting, it's come back up again about the whole hijab debate has entered into the discussion again. And I thought of this in the sanctuary city. Is Montreal in the sanctuary city? Is it? No.
No, it's before the council. They're thinking about declaring themselves a sanctuary city.
And it goes back to that. I think I meant to mention this under sort of the Kalich and the values. And they're saying, well, you know, we don't like ostentatious religious displays. And this is coming from a city that's got a giant electric cross in the middle of it, right?
Yeah.
So when I was like, yeah, I've been up to Montreal. I've seen the cross a couple of times. And it's unfortunate.
Kind of hard to miss.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate when the debate turns to that, because it's so, like I said, in an instant, it goes from like, we need to help certain people in the community that don't have access to resources, one night, and then it becomes about, you know, their headgear or their faith, and it's just ridiculous, in my view.
Well, interesting, coming back to the attack at St. Roy, the initial incident was when the Mayor Cam Guthrie, our mayor, posted on his blog about condolences to that community there, the Muslims, who six of whom were shot dead and 20 more who were injured. Somebody posted, like, it was it was basically an alt-right tirade about how Cam should dye his hair purple and, you know, walk around holding a vagina sign. I don't know what that is.
They're mixing up the hats and the signs, maybe.
Maybe. But it's still, it's... Anyway, I don't want to get into semantics, but
no.
it just this like sort of ugly eruption of what's basically like he's just giving condolences, just like this is here's an awful thing, and my sympathies go out to these victims. And as the mayor of Guelph, I represent representing a community. I am sending community condolences to another community over this horrible thing that has happened. And someone's like, "Well, no, this is unacceptable," and because racist talk.
Yeah, and speaking of eruptions, we should touch on the Walmart incident.
Yes.
Which is another
bizarre one.
That was pretty bizarre for a few reasons, one of which, and I was surprised at this, but in some ways it's a good thing. I know this is going to sound weird, that one of the, it was three, for those of you who don't know the story, there was three students shopping at the Walmart, and one of the cashiers said that, oh, you're not citizens, and wasn't going to serve them because they weren't citizens.
Asked to see their papers.
Like, I've been shopping, and you know, maybe, I don't know if it's a statement of privilege, but I've been in stores all around the world, and I mean around the world, even like in Moscow, and no one's ever asked me to see if I was a citizen. Like, if you can flash the cash...
Yeah.
It doesn't or shouldn't matter, right?
But need to show your passport to get a stick of gum anywhere, even at the airport.
Exactly. But one of the students had said that she said, this is the first time I've been discriminated against my skin color. And I thought, that's actually kind of impressive.
Yeah.
Considering that she, you know, maybe pushing 20 years old and this is the first time. Maybe it's the first time it's happened at Walmart. I don't know. But I believe that the employee has been dealt with. I guess they're just gone.
Yeah, they were dismissed.
Yeah.
And that came from the Walmart press person. For full transparency, I just want to say my sister Elizabeth is an assistant manager, not at the Walmart in question, but at the Orangeville Walmart. I just wanted to say that. But...
And Adam in no way represents Walmart or the affiliate companies. Yeah.
Very true.
We're going to get one of those, yeah.
Yeah.
Guy with an opinion.
Find the full legal ease disclaimer on our website. No, not really. But no, I did write this in my column as well. It's like I do wonder how many people this cashier might have said something similar to. And nobody said anything. I mean, it was only because, and the girl's name was Yasmin Zaya.
Yes.
She posted on her Facebook page. And some people picked it up, and then the press picked it up, and
then you're done. Yeah,
yeah, you're done. Yeah. But I wonder, like, why would this person just automatically pick on Yasim? They probably wouldn't. They've probably done this to other students who either did not have the foresight, or perhaps out of embarrassment, or fear about soliciting more. Sort of racial attacks, didn't say anything about it.
And it's come out that a former employee has commented, they've come forward, I'm not sure how much more detail we'll get on that, said that somebody was discriminatory towards her while she worked there who happened to be on cash. So it sounds like there may be a bit of a pattern. Whether it's the same person or not, we don't know, but the fact that it was commented in the same story kind of indicates that there might be a little bit of a pattern here. But, and you know, again, to me, in this town, in Guelph, if you want to go to I would say Walmart is probably the most multicultural location in town. That would be difficult to argue. That you go to Walmart and...
Yeah, I would say so.
You don't necessarily... It's not as white bready as the rest of town, let's say. Am I going to get into deep trouble for my remarks? I don't know, but it's...
No, I mean,
it's true.
There's a universality to Walmart because we all want...
Yes.
Moderately... decent stuff at cheap prices. So.
Yeah. Second would probably be Costco, but in terms of like, so this person, however long they
work, Costco's members only, so.
Yes.
Walmart, I think you're right about
There's
that.
There's a bit of privilege there, too.
Yeah.
But and just in general.
Costco privilege.
The Costco privilege, yeah. The gas is 5 cents cheaper. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, anybody working there they obviously have, you would hope they have training as well, don't they, in terms of these kinds of.
Not necessarily. If you can push the buttons, you're probably ready to go on cash.
Yes. No offense, Walmart workers. It's just, you know.
No,
and now it's going robo, right? It's auto checkouts now, so
cash
might not even matter much.
I have used the robo checkouts at the Stone Road
and
Mall.
And I usually try to go to when somebody working there, same with Home Depot and that. But there are times when someone is at the cash and they're doing that whole grinding everything to a halt. That's the only time I go to the auto checkout because somebody is doing something dumb.
Oh, this yeah.
Started, it's like this is going like, into a Seinfeld episode, but you know what I mean, though.
What's the deal with people who prize match?
And then she's in her purse, and she's looking for something, and
hour discussion, because nothing ticks me off more than people and price matching.
I just have a box
store.
Of number 10 screws, and
yeah.
Anyway, okay,
I hear you.
We got an hour on shopping.
Okay, we are going to take a break and then come back with the back half of the show, because this is Open Sources and it's an hour long. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
What was that? That was the Beatles from 1960-something. Anyway, today is the anniversary.
1960-something.
1962 was Twist and Shout, but that album was a Capitol re-release called Twist and Shout. Capitol capitalizing on the popularity of the Beatles. It was on this day, February 9th, 1964, that the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show and North America completely flipped their wigs. And it sounds like it's one of those moments where rock and roll became a different thing. I don't think something like that would happen now in the age of Netflix and that everybody at the same time would sit around and watch this semi-crappy show just to see 7 minutes of a band.
Ed Sullivan was a semi-crappy show? Interesting.
That's just in my opinion. But try and watch the whole episode that the Beatles are on. It's bad. Like, I feel sorry for anybody that was alive those days. It was the only thing on. I guess you could play cards or that. Let's play bridge until those Beatle fellows come on. Anyway, February 9th, 1964, a day that will live in musical history.
Yes. Thank you for...
What are you talking about? Yeah, okay.
Oh, Beatles, old man.
Hospitalis. 53 years ago. 53 years, for God's sakes.
Only two Beatles left, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you know who is also still left, who is around in the 60s? Queen Elizabeth II.
You're going to say Donald Trump is one of the two.
Well, he was.
Donald Trump and Queen Elizabeth II.
Donald Trump would have been one of those people who watched it on TV. He
invented them.
Oh, jeez. I could totally.
I discovered the Beatles.
I
know their mothers.
We're going to talk about Trump in a minute.
Yes, true.
So Queen Elizabeth is celebrating 65 years on the throne this week. It was a Sapphire Jubilee. It's an interesting case, Queen Elizabeth, because she has an 80% approval rating.
Yeah, it's huge, isn't it?
In the UK.
You can't say anything bad about the... Well, you can.
Well, you can. I mean, 20% of people must, but it is interesting, you know, because it's the 20th anniversary of the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, this year. And I remember back at the time, even before Diana died, there was already talk about how long the monarchy would last. I mean, there were a lot of people who were angry at Charles for letting Diana get away, as it were. You know, and then the immediate reaction of the royal family to her passing didn't engender her to a lot of people who loved the Princess of Wales. But, you know, 20 years later, it's quite the recovery. You don't really hear a lot of people talking smack about getting rid of the monarchy these days.
No, and there's a few factors in play too, because the monarchy, you've seen it, right? The movie The Queen with Helen Mirren as the Queen is a fantastic film. If you're
great film.
Curious about the royal family, it's probably worth checking out. And the whole basis of that film was around the time period when Princess Diana, Lady Diana, died in a car accident. Yeah, it was her approval. It's pretty amazing that I think that she has probably hung around long enough and overcome so many thumps. And she had her annus horribilis, as she called it, in the 90s as well, when the part of the palace burnt down. And
mm-hmm.
And it was when I think there was two sets of divorces then. This was prior to
right,
Charles
there was
and Diana, right?
Andrew
it was
and
Andrew
Fergie
all
right
finished.
That,
like yeah. all the marriages were finished. Like her sister Princess Margaret had the same thing in the 60s, and it was a massive scandal then. And
oh, yeah.
Then you have the royal family, like none of them can stay together. I think a bit of the bounce back has been the next most popular royal to the Queen is Prince Harry. And mm-hmm. people, I think, like his kind of rock and roll style, we'll call it, right? So he's seasoned in the army. He seems like a bit of a punk. he does. He does. He just has this sort of attitude, let's say. And of course, the William and Kate and the couple. The couple du jour. It's the couple isn't Charles and Camilla. I think a lot of people would be very happy if Charles just kind of said, you know, I don't really want to be king. I just let one of the boys do it. That's exactly how he'll say it, too, by the way.
Let one of the boys do it.
He sounds like Peter O'Toole or James Mason. He'll be gone. I think he'll just get passed over. But yeah, but you did mention the Crown on Netflix. Yeah. Like that, all of this, I think, fuels the whole why people feel that they need the royals. The 20% that you were talking about are the ones mm-hmm. that point out the fact that the royals cost the UK and us too, I guess, to some degree, like £40 million a year. And that's just in upkeep, which is like pushing $70 million Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this is a family that probably have half a billion dollars in assets around the world, probably including certain chunks of Canada. So a lot of people have issue with that when it's like, you know, you see the folks on the breadline. It's like, meanwhile, the Queen is feeding her corgis good food, you know. But she's still massively popular. Don't get me wrong. So I'm not saying that from a Republican standpoint.
I hear you on that. But I mean, that's always been a thing with you know, royalty, you know, but way back the time in memoriam.
Let the meat cake, yes.
Yes. Well, that's wildly miscontextualized.
Let the meat organic turnips.
Yes.
oh, no.
That would have been something. But yeah, it is. I do think that popularity, though, is fueled by pop culture. You know, the Crown being one, it's like this huge award-winning thing.
John Lithgow as Winston Churchill. Like, I can't even visualize that, but yeah.
But he's great. I've watched a couple of episodes. I haven't watched the whole thing yet. But yeah, he's really good. And Claire Foy, who plays Elizabeth, is very good. But there was also another movie. I can't remember its name last year, but it was like. It was kind of like this weird kind of, you know, super bad, and it's kind of a bad comparison, but you know, it all happened in one night.
Super bad,
but
with
it's
the royals?
But it's about, you know, Elizabeth and Margaret on VE Day.
Yeah, because they snuck out, right? That's a famous story where they were just sort of out. This would never happen now. Right. They just went among the people.
Yeah.
But,
you couldn't get away with it now if you were Prince Harry or, you know,
oh, geez, not all.
You can't even see his girlfriend without.
Yes, you'd have to really, really be in disguise. And you talk about how the Queen endears herself to people. I know for a fact my father really liked the Queen because she was a mechanic during the war.
Yeah.
Like towards the end of the war, she was still a very young woman, but she was in the women's, what are they called, the Auxiliary Territorial Service.
Yeah.
And she's a mechanic. And my father was a mechanic, and, you know, he thought Liz could do no wrong. just on the mere fact that if something happened to the Jeep, she knew what to do. So, you know, I made the comment about the corgis.
Which is another scene in The Queen where she...
Is it really?
Yeah. Well,
oh, yeah. Yeah, that... I mean, she's out on the estate, right? Is it Balmoral or whatever?
Yeah.
That's right, and she knew what to do. So Liz knows what to do, even though she's 90 and doesn't. Although when she was ill around Christmas time, there, I think a lot of people were like, "Oh, this might be it," because you know Christmas is one of those times of year where just stuff like that seems to happen.
Very
but,
true.
You know, she's still hanging on. Ma lived to what, 102 or something?
Yeah. So I mean,
Grandma Queen was 102. So
I mean, it's so yeah, people are already looking at 2022, which will be Platinum Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's entirely possible.
Well, it was pointed out that
he's older, right? Like he's still cooking.
Philip? Yeah, he's
93, 94, somewhere.
At least. Yeah, he is a couple years older. A former doctor, by the way. No, because he's played by Matt Smith in The Crown.
Oh, that's right. Doctor Who's in it? And, guy from The World According to Garp, isn't it? Yeah.
But, Yeah, so it's very likely that she will hang around for 2022, but it was pointed out on I guess it was Monday it was the actual day, but you know that every year is a record breaking year for her because Sapphire Jubilee Queen Victoria was 2 years short of her Sapphire Jubilee when she was on the throne for 63 years, so every basically every minute she's, you know, it is a new record in terms of her longevity. So she's probably going to be, you know, enjoying her place in the record books for a very long time.
It's something. It's like you, anybody who's going to collect their first pension check from the government this year was born when Elizabeth took the throne in 52.
Yeah.
So it's like that's something. It's quite the run. 52? Three. I should know this.
Well,
for 10 points, subtract 7 from.
Well, if I remember correctly, her George the VI died in 52, but she wasn't officially coronated until 53.
Yes, and you become the queen the day of. That's right. So
yes,
good point. That's why I'm confused.
But I mean, that's another kind of a weird kind of trivia thing is that she shouldn't have been queen. It wasn't because it wasn't unless Edward hadn't abdicated, and thus elevating George the VI, she wouldn't have been queen. So I mean, that's another kind of weird sort of hiccup of history that, you know, she's this person who's become so central and so beloved, but it's almost accidental that she finds herself in this position.
Yeah, and it's probably a good thing too, because it sounds like Edward was not only quite useless, he was a Nazi aficionado, among other things. So I think they said, okay, pal, you take your American woman there and stay away from us, and then we'll...
And that's a great segue to talking about Trump.
Yeah, that's our new Trump theme. It's me going doodly-doo in the microphone.
Well, no, I meant the Nazi thing.
Oh, okay. Let's roll with that, Adam. The phone is starting to ring.
Well, anyway. Bannon, whatever. Here's an update in case you guys did not hear. Trudeau-Trump meeting Monday.
Oh, Monday? That's
in Washington,
soon?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. Why so quickly?
I don't know. That's
weird. Usually these things take months of planning. Now, mind you, there's been some preliminary meetings, right? Christopher Freeland was there
yesterday, and Bill Morneau is down there today. And I guess this is all to lay the groundwork. I mean, and yeah, they've been working with Trump transition people even before Trump took office. Sean Scary Spicer was out on during his White House briefing yesterday, and he said that he would have more information today about when this meeting was going to take place. Of course,
Nordstrom attack. I want to hear more about the Nordstrom attack.
Nordstrom Gate attack.
It's an attack on the president when you attack his daughter's clothing line that's been cut from a
This
shop.
Is all I'll say about this. You would think a business person would understand a business decision like removing a line that isn't selling, and her clothes weren't selling.
It's a free market.
Free market.
It's capitalism in action. If you want capitalism, here you go. It's like you're going to get cut.
It's an attack.
Yeah, no, it isn't.
If your entire raison d'être is that you are a businessman and you can't understand market forces, get the hell out.
But then it got weird again with Kellyanne Conway saying, oh, I'm going to go buy her products and you should go buy her stuff. And it's like, and I think the oversight committee is very quietly saying, you know, Kellyanne, you can't actually do that. You're not allowed to do that.
Oh, yeah.
She did it.
Spicer said in his briefing today that... she's been counseled about not doing that. I wish they would counsel her about not, you know, making up fake massacres.
Actually doing her job, yeah.
but so, yeah, the Trump-Trudeau meeting, I find it very interesting that... I was thinking about this today. He really hasn't gone anywhere except Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
He's been kind of like ensconced in Washington the last 3 weeks, and you'd think like being president, he might want to
Twitter in his bathrobe bathrobe that he may or may not own.
He does not own a bathrobe, anyway. No, I mean it's kind of and I've been thinking about this for someone who's kind of cocooned in his own reality. It's kind of even scarier that he's kind of cocooned himself in the White House now, and he's kind of only seeing like. People who are like his staffers and people who are like government people. I mean, yeah, and he's getting
and we pray for
like
them and
the
hope
Sheriff's
that they're giving
Association.
Him good advice. Oh my god!
Yeah, but you know, he has people coming to him, and I was talking on the show last week about, or was it last week or was it the week before? Must have been the week before about the Harley Davidson. He was supposed to go to Wisconsin to tour Harley Davidson there, but they're afraid of protests.
They had the
Harley Davidson guys come to the White House. And I was thinking about this. What's going to happen with the first G8 or G20 meeting?
Oh, can you imagine? There's no way they're going to hold it anywhere on this continent. There's no way.
I can't imagine them holding it anywhere where there's a possibility. Because
how about an island in the Bermuda?
Well, they're going to have to. They're going to have to hold it on one of those artificial islands the Chinese have made. It's striking because you have, speaking of England, what's going on in England, where you have the Speaker of the House there saying, well, Trump's not going to be talking in this house. You have protests about people protesting Theresa May extending the invitation for him to come to England. People just angry at the invitation.
Yeah.
For him to come to England.
It was like well over a million people signing certain petitions saying, we don't want this.
Did you see somebody posted like this fake news story that the Queen can appear. The Queen can apparently
decapitate
kill Trump
or something.
Kill Trump with a sword, and it's perfectly
anybody
lawful.
Go, hey.
And everyone's like, "Do it, Liz, do it."
Wouldn't that be something? But, he lunged at me, so I.
But he's not even going to be able to go to a state dinner in England, like longtime ally England, without there being a ruckus. He can't even go to a factory in Wisconsin, you know, home of the Speaker of the House, one of the several states he won to become president, without the fear of raising a ruckus. So how is he supposed to go to a G20 meeting where guarantee there's going to be a ruckus, even if, you know, I don't know, the Care Bear showed up?
And I bet if they wanted to hold it in Scotland, too, he would be like, well, let's just have it at my golf course. You know, it'd be something like that,
man.
Right? I need to check in on it anyway. Even though he's supposed to have divested in everything and not involved anymore. It'll be, oh, by the way, like, yeah, it's just going to get weirder. I don't think it's going to get easy. You know, we've talked about Trump every week for the past however many weeks. It's just spiraling into such a strange world of like what the softness of the towels on Air Force One is.
Oh my lord.
Or the Easy D tweet. Did you hear about
this? Yes, the Easy D tweet.
I was a little bit reluctant to talk about it, but it's like he really doesn't know what Easy D is or means, but I think he thought he knew what it meant, but then of course the memes just start coming.
Well, this is him trying to cram like complex thoughts into like a couple of tweets.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't make Twitter
like all
work
all the time,
bro.
You can't do it when you're the president. Well, he can. He seems to be able to do it, but it's just taken a turn for the strange. We knew it would when it's stuff like Ivanka's clothes or the towel softness or do I wear a robe. I can't even believe these things are issues. I can in some ways, but it's like, is this all you got? Like these are your concerns? You're not worried about, I don't know, the barbarians at the gates or what's going on in any geopolitical thing at all. It's just sort of like, no, the towels aren't soft enough. Like,
well, that's the thing.
Kidding?
That's the thing. It's burying like the actual stuff, like the real troubling stuff, like him getting up on Monday at CENTCOM and saying, the media is covering up a lot of terrorist attacks. Like, they're not really going after all these terrorist attacks
like
that are happening.
Like the Bowling Green one, yeah.
In Atlanta.
The Atlanta one, too. Yeah, that's right.
So the press is like, well, what aren't we covering? And then they release this 70-point list of attacks. On it is things like Orlando, the Pulse nightclub shooting, the San Bernardino, Paris attacks, the Nice attacks. So, like, things that they, like, networks sent anchors to cover live and in person from these places. So, not only that, and then on top of that, the thing was littered with typos. They spelt attacker wrong. They left out the C. Like, I think the number was like 19 times attacker was spelt wrong.
Attacker. Somebody did a whole parody article on that, the fact that the spelling is just not great, G-R-A-T-E.
But then, you know what they left off of the list? Right-wing white nationalists.
Oh, of course.
And, of course, what happened last week in here in Canada, talk about underreporting. Because if that had been a Muslim guy shooting up a church, you better believe Wolf Blitzer would have been on the first plane to Quebec City.
Yeah.
No question. And I mean, this is where media does sort of take its lumps. I mean, the Canadian press response was even criticized because it took a couple of hours, I guess, to reach the CBC and the CTV news channels before it was reported.
Bad information came out.
Right. And of course, the Trump administration, too, was all like, hey, isn't this a terrible thing that happened? So long as it was a Moroccan suspect they were looking for. But as soon as it was Whitey McWhiterson.
So get all quiet.
Yeah.
Get all quiet.
Trump is right. There is some stuff that's being underreported. It's not the stuff that he wants to focus on, which is all the Muslim stuff, which, of course, justifies the ban, not a ban, that is currently being mulled at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal.
And has caused all sorts of trouble for at least, figure, about 100,000 people.
Oh, at least.
Affected directly. And others too, like those with Nexus cards going from Canada who are dual citizens. Probably the first thing I was thinking about was people who drive truck.
Mm-hmm.
It's like anybody. And the woman being essentially harassed because of her getting grilled about being a Muslim and checking her phone and that.
Yeah,
and
what does she think about Trump? Which, yeah. I mean, it's like getting really, really, really... I mean, that's really skirting the fine lines between politics and national security, is that you have somebody at the border interrogating someone about what they personally think of the president and then wanting the password to the phone so they can start checking social media accounts to make sure that you aren't posting meanie bobini stuff about Trump.
And it just so happened she had something prayer oriented on her phone, and then that was it. As soon as they see that,
game over, man.
Yeah, you're done.
You're religious, game over.
She seemed to handle it fairly well, but yeah. It's one of those things where you're like, you know, this is what it's coming to now. It almost seems like it seems worse than 9/11. And I don't know if that was, you know, Bush had his famous statement, like, we don't hate Muslim people. And that sort of, I can't believe we're at the point now where they're going to look back at Bush and see and say that he may not be the worst president ever. Right?
I don't think he was the worst ever.
I know, the worst president ever will be Mike Pence. Possibly, we'll see.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, the devil's in the details, right? Because... we're getting all this. We're kind of get focused on all this sort of celebrity drama stuff, which is like the Ivanka clothing thing
and bathrobes.
The other thing, the bathrobe thing, and the Melania thing about how in her lawsuit came out that, you know, Daily Mail inferring that she was a high priced escort affects her earning potential as first lady, which is like, yeah, you're not supposed to go into the White House with an expectation you're going to turn a profit for your personal brand. That's not why you go into politics.
Sounds like that's it all over, isn't it? It's like that's the plan.
Right, but meanwhile, like,
how could I benefit from this?
Yeah, but meanwhile, he's like signing executive orders that he apparently doesn't read. That's how Steve Bannon gets on the National Security Council. Trump didn't know he was putting Steve Bannon on the National Security Council. They just put the thing in front of him. They let him sign checks with a stamp, I guess. I don't know. But he's clearly not reading it. There's stories leaking out that, again, that like the wandering around in the bathrobe thing, not only that, but him like waking up in the morning and putting on the cable news and then tweeting about what he sees on cable news, apparently stopping everything in the middle of the day so we can watch Sean Spicer do the...
And critique his clothing.
Yeah.
Don't you have a dark suit? Like, what?
Yeah. And,
really?
Yeah. So he could give, like, Sean Spicer a criticism for, you know, how he handled the press at the briefing that day.
I don't think he's going to last, which is unfortunate for Melissa McCarthy. Like, I don't think he's going to last, but
it's unfortunate
like, that was
for
the
Melissa
funniest.
McCarthy.
It was really, it kept hitting the feeds. And I'm like, what is this? Like, oh my God, this is hilarious.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 for that one.
If only because, like, somehow she not only channeled him, but somehow they made her, like, the spitting image of him, where you see it in the thumbnail. Is that Sean Spicer or is that Melissa McCarthy?
And Trump was awfully quiet about it, too, so it might have touched a little bit of a nerve.
Yeah, that's the rumor, is that... And you know what the really thing that got him apparently ticked off was? Not that they made fun of Spicer.
Is it because
it was a woman?
Yeah,
making fun of Spicer.
Yeah.
Which... says so much about where that man's head's at.
Do you think there's anything to this Rosie O'Donnell, Steve Bannon thing? They almost have to do it now. It's like one of those things where, like, we need to get Betty White, and then they get Betty White. We need to get Rosie O'Donnell as Steve Bannon. And
they're going to do something with Rosie. I don't know what it is. I like the Grim Reaper Steve Bannon too much.
That was pretty good. Rolls.
to sort of give it up.
This is how we get all of our news, people. We watch.
Well, it's not how I get all the news.
Yes, all of it.
But there's also The Daily Show and Sam B.
Yes.
No. But I mean, yeah, the scary part is that he seems like really obsessed with the presentation of being president, not really terribly worried about the meat and potatoes of being president. He's doing all these press events. He's doing all these like signing ceremonies. And
the Black History Month breakfast, which was painful.
See, there's too much to talk about.
Ben Carson to advise you on.
So we'll save it for next week. And
Trumplandia
just a reminder,
to be continued. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And just a reminder, next week, Waterloo, Kitchener-Waterloo MPP Catherine Fife will be joining us in the second half of the show. So if you have questions for her or any topics you'd like us to pursue while she is here, you can connect with us at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook at @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and you can download the podcast from Podbean or iTunes on the Guelph Politicast channel. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on Facebook, The Spanner Book, and thank you. I love the new logo, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome.
The wrench Spanner Book. Dun, dun, dun.
T-shirts
will be available.
I did put that on the Open Sources page, that you can connect directly with Politico and Spanner Book the Open Sources page. So if you only have one bookmark left in your web browser,
make it Spanner Book.
Anyway, stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and then come back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we'll see you then.